And you are listening to CKLN, that is Sonny Bradshaw, the late Sonny Bradshaw's Jamaican Jazz Band with Bob Marley's Waiting in Vain. And we have Dr. Gerald Horn on the line, and our guest has not shown up, but we're going to continue because Mr. Horn is only here for a few more moments, and we're going to begin the discussion. We're going to bring in JP and I started to say Melissa, but Melinda Francis, and I'm going to let Jean JP start the discussion off. He's the man that has some very what do you think about Jack Layton coming to the NDP and their surge of support all over Canada, especially in Quebec where you grew up?
Well, I didn't actually grow up there, but I will say this, that what he's doing is he's definitely bleeding support from the Bloc Québécois that is left of center Blocists. So they're separatists, but they're also very much in favor of the government subsidizing things like post-secondary education. I don't know if you're aware of it, but residents of Quebec pay half what the rest of the country pays in tuition. They're very much in favor of government paying for abortions. They're very much in favor of the government not funding, or when they do help private religious schools, they make sure, for example, that they're not teaching creationism in a science class. So they're very progressive. So that is the support that's been bleeding from the Bloc Québécois towards the NDP. So there's a kind of a seismic shift going on in Quebec whereby they're still separatists, because they look at the separatist movement as being the bastion is Quebec City more so than Ottawa. You know what I mean? Because they consider Quebec City, that's what they call the Assemblée Nationale, is in Quebec, not in Ottawa. So they're bleeding the left-wing support from the Bloc Québécois towards the NDP just to shake things up, because the next election, they might not vote NDP again. It remains to be seen whether they will this election or not, but it looks like they're going to.
Let me say this before Melinda and Gerald jump in, but there were two people in the Bloc that defected and said that they were going to support.
I was reading that, and that's exactly what they were saying, though. I was reading an article on that.
It's a temporary support.
Right. They're saying we're still separatists, but because of where the NDP has come out in this election on things like constitutional debates and blah, 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 they're saying, well, because the NDP is now, they're looking at it as an option, as a left-of-center option. The Liberals are no longer that federalist option. They don't want people voting federalist anyway. But they're saying, in the meantime, we still have to play by the rules of Ottawa. So let's get as many NDPers in there as we can on a federalist kind of platform, deal with these people, because they're really worried about what Harper's going to do. You know, they're really worried. So, but yeah, they did a couple. I don't know. They're Bloc members, but I don't think they're campaigning. I don't think they're actual candidates in this election. I can double check that.
Let's hear.
They signed an open letter to have people bleed off to the NDP, which has already happened.
Hear from Melinda and let Gerald come in after that.
It's interesting to me is the crazy media shift that happened. That seemed like overnight, and I would like to talk about that. Like, you know, at the beginning of the election campaign, it was, you know, this fight between conservatives and liberals. And then it seemed like overnight, the media came on side, with the orange kind of sweep of the nation. So I'm really interested in like the media shift.
Dr. Horn, what do you think about the situation? How does it look from across the border? You're listening to CKLN, and have we lost the good doctor? We're going to get the doctor back, and this is Saturday Morning Live. My name is Norman Otis Richmond. We're in the studio with JP and Melinda Francis, and we're going to get Dr. Horn back. I don't...
What do you think?
In terms of...
The media shift, it seemed like overnight now.
I think the media shift happened because I guess Jack Layton soared and they really could not ignore him. That's what it looks like to me. Because all of a sudden you looked up and it was the conservatives fighting the, like you said, the liberals. And then the next thing you know, Harper is attacking Jack Layton, especially Natia has just gone off on he talks about Jack Layton harder, more than he talks about Stephen Harper. I mean, and I mean, Inatieth is so bad now that Inatieth is not even going to leave Ontario. He can't leave on. He's got to stay in Ontario, I guess, primarily in the ridings where the Liberals might lose support.
Right.
Yeah, it looks pretty bad. We have Dr. Horn.
Yes, sir.
Were you listening online, or did you miss what we said?
No, I missed it.
Oh, well, the question is, how does the election look south of the border in terms of, and you're reading international papers, but first, I guess it's a two-pointed question, how has the U.S. press covered these May 2nd elections, one, and the international press, which you keep abreast of, how is there a difference between how the international and the American press is covering the Canadian elections?
Well, I think the story in both the U.S. press and the global press is the NDP and Jack Layton. And let me advise, if not warn, Canadians to be very careful about U.S. interference in the internal affairs of Canada, because it's no secret that the NDP is not the favored candidate in Washington. And it's well known that the United States specializes in interfering in internal affairs of countries where they're about to elect candidates they do not favor. And that brings me to a question I'd like to pose, which is, how does Ms. Raleigh see this Canadian election, and how does she explain the decline of both the Tories and the Liberals, and concomitantly, the apparent rise of the NDP?
Well, Ms. Raleigh is not
Well, let me ask Mr. Richmond then.
Well, I think that the NDP is rising, I think, for two reasons. One, that Mr. Inatieth and the Liberal Party has done such a poor they are coming across as a joke, one, and number two, Mr. Layton, fortunately or unfortunately, has moved a little bit to the they moved a little bit to the right. They're still the best game in town, but you know, Jack Layton is talking about more cops. He's in his international policy is he's fallen. I mean, the whole Libya thing, I'm very disappointed. If whatever happens, and I'm hoping that he will do better than do well, but we still have to hold his feet to the fire on his international policies in particular, and some of his local policies, like this police thing. I don't approve of that, and I have had discussions inside the NDP about the police, their position on the police, for many, many, many years. They are not aggressive enough on that issue. That's how I see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that the NDP is doing relatively well in Quebec, and that's part of the secret to their ascension in this election cycle. And I take it that their ascension in Quebec is tied to a decline of the Bloc. And I guess the question is, why is the Bloc, the Quebec Nationalists, apparently not doing as well during this election cycle?
Well, Ms. Raleigh has just walked in the door, so I'm going to back up and let you ask her those two questions, and we can let you get out of here, so you can get out at a good time. But Liz Raleigh has just walked in, the star of the show. And she's going to put on her headphones. This is Saturday Morning Live. You're listening to CKLN. We are at CKLN.fm, and we're listening. You can hear us on the World Wide Web. So if you're listening, please call your friends and let them know that CKLN, we're still online. We haven't gone anywhere. And Liz Raleigh, can you hear? Can you hear?
I can. How are you, Norman?
I'm good, but I think Mr. Horn wanted to ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
Well, I'm looking at the polling data concerning this Canadian election. It seems like Canada is about to have a political earthquake with the rise of the NDP. And my question is, why are the Tories doing so poorly? Why does polling data suggest that the Liberals are doing so poorly? It seems as if the NDP rise is in part tied to its ascension in Quebec, which leads to the question of why is the Bloc apparently suffering, too, at the hands of the NDP? It seems like the election is all about the NDP, and so how do you explain that?
Well, of course, everybody is quite interested to see the NDP's surge and their forward movement. That's a very welcome development compared to the other choices of the of those in Parliament. But I think what is important to see is that I think most of that, most of the increase in their popular support comes from the Liberals and the Bloc in Quebec. It's not eating into the Tory vote. And if we're going to prevent a Tory majority, which I think is the number one job, we still have a lot of work to do. I saw in this morning's Toronto Star that the in addition to the good fortune for the NDP in the polls, the Tories have actually risen by 2%. They're at 37%. So they're getting very close to majority territory again. And I don't think it will serve Canadians very well to see a Tory majority within, you know, with an increased NDP vote. I think what really needs to happen here is that there needs to be some cooperation of the progressive forces to make sure that the Tories, and that includes the NDP, to make sure that the Tories don't get a majority, and hopefully they don't get a minority either. Of course, all kinds of things are possible in the Canadian electoral system. If the Tories were elected with a minority and didn't have the confidence of the House, meaning the other parties that were elected, and that could include, by the way, a Green, that's not out of out of the question. Rather than going to another election, the Governor General could ask if there is another party that could form a government. So then you would be looking at some kind of formal cooperation between the other parties in the House against the Conservatives. And given you may not be aware, I think you're calling from the States, am I right?
Yes.
You are correct.
We have, I think you probably know that we, because I think we've spoken before, that we have an extremely right-wing mayor and a majority on city council here in Toronto, Rob Ford. And last night he was in Brampton at a rally endorsing the Conservatives and Harper. And this is the first time that he's actually come out and said, okay, I'm a Tory. And that's who's backing my campaign in Toronto, and that's who I'm backing federally, and I expect provincially as well. We have a provincial election in October here. I think that people across the country should now take a real good look at what's happened in Toronto in the 5 short months since Ford was elected, because if you want to see how a Tory majority would operate, look at Toronto. And what they have done is they have managed to get the provincial government to withdraw the right, to eliminate the right to strike for transit employees, for the transit union. They have announced that they're going to sell off social housing, which will leave hundreds of thousands of tenants in Toronto in a terrible situation. Some of them will undoubtedly end up on the streets. They've privatized half of the garbage collection in the city and announced that the other half is on the agenda for next year. And so that leaves the inside workers and municipal employees who are unionized. They're next on the hit list, no doubt. They've said before that they were going to eliminate half of the unionized workers in the city. So this is what we can expect from a Tory majority in Canada, and it is fearful. If people think that they're just, you know, nice guys, they won't do anything too bad, they've been around for 5 years, haven't done anything too awful, they should take a look at Toronto, because when these guys have a majority, they strike, they move fast, and a lot of people are going to get hurt.
And you're listening to Saturday Morning Live. That was Liz Raleigh from the Communist Party of Canada, and on the line from North Carolina, pardon me, is Dr. Gerald Horn. Do you have another question, Mr. Horn?
Well, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to have to sign off, Norman. I would really love to stay on and get further insight into this Canadian election, which I think could shake up the entire North Atlantic community, and it could have, hopefully, ripple effect through the United States, through Britain, and throughout Western Europe. So I think there's a heavy burden on the shoulders of Canadian voters, but I'm confident that they'll live up to their responsibilities.
So that means Canada would be in the most progressive, have the most progressive government, if Jack Layton does well, in the in all of all the bourgeois democracies of the North Atlantic North Atlantic countries, I guess.
Well, I would say generally, even including more progressive than Japan as well. I mean, this is premised on the point of the NDP doing well, the Greens getting a seat, and then you're having this sort of coalition government, if you like, of these kinds of forces. I mean, Canada would be head and shoulders above the rest. I mean, after all, you have this Tory-led government in London, you have a conservative, Mr. Sarkozy, in France, a Christian Democrat, a conservative in Berlin with Angela Merkel, this clownish conservative in Rome, Berlusconi, and then you would have Canada with potentially a government leaning to the left. This would be quite remarkable, and I would also say would perhaps could make Canada the target of external intervention.
All right.
Always to be guarded against.
So next week we will be calling you back.
I hope so. Take care.
All right. Yeah, that was Dr. Gerald Horn. And in the studio with me is Liz Raleigh of the Communist Party. She is a candidate in Brampton, Springdale. Mm-hmm. Also, we have Miguel Figueroa, who is a candidate. We've had him on the show before. Also, Kathy Holliday is a candidate in Toronto Center. Miguel Figueroa is a candidate in Davenport, and Kathy Holliday is a candidate in Toronto Center. And I wanted you to talk about the Communist Party's plans on the elections, and you want to dump the Harper Tories and block the right. I wanted you to talk about what is the Communist Party's program for this for the May 2nd elections here in Toronto.
Well,
or I should say Canada. Sir. Pardon me.
Thanks very much for having me on your show, Norman. Well, we think that Canada really is at a crossroads, and your guest a moment ago put his finger on, you know, what are the possibilities on the plus side. We think that the most important thing at this point is to deny the Tories a majority, and if possible to prevent a minority as well, and for the reasons that I gave, that if they have a majority, they will really transform the country. And Harper himself, when he was the head of the National Citizens Coalition, said, "Give me 5 years and a majority, and you won't recognize the country." And
he said that himself.
Yeah, we absolutely believe him. And if you live in Toronto, so you know, although perhaps your listeners don't all know, how rapidly the Ford administration has moved to dismantle programs that have been built up over years, rights. Civil and democratic and labor rights and so on. So we think that that's why we really hold that to be an important centerpiece of what we're trying to accomplish in the election. Now, the question is, what's the alternative then? If not this extreme right government, we say to people, then what? Well, the The NDP and the Liberals are in a position where they could form a coalition, and the Greens, others, should they be elected. And we think the that a coalition is the way to go in order to ensure that we don't just have a minority, a right-wing minority, but could move off in another direction. There are examples of that in Ontario. In 1985, the Liberals and the NDP got together, not in the form of a coalition, but they agreed on an agenda of things they wanted to do together, an accord, as they called it. And the result was to get rid of 40 years of continuous Tory rule, and that was a big step forward for Ontario.
That was got rid of Davis.
That's right. They got rid of Bill Davis. And the question arises, why not now? If we were to now, I have to speak a little bit about some of the shortcomings of the NDP, because I think
people, you must do that.
People may think that, you know, this is we will achieve nirvana if we have some kind of a coalition there and ice the Tories. That would be an important first step. But people in Ontario, at least, will remember that it wasn't, peaches and cream after we had a Liberal government and then we had the NDP government. And that indicates some of the shortcomings in those parties. First of all, the Liberal Party is a right-wing party. It's a big business party. And what they're after is not significantly different from what the Tories are after.
Right, conservatives, right.
Yeah, and during the election, for example, people have talked to us about health care and so on. And where I'm running is in Brampton Springtill is where the Osler Hospital is. And this was the first P3 hospital public-private partnership. And this one was cooked up by the Tories when they were in office in the 90s, but fully delivered, and many more delivered, by the Liberals. Same thing, you know. So we need to look at something more fundamental, we would argue. We are looking at what we call a people's coalition. And that it should include, yes, political parties and political personalities, but it should also include trade unions, the women's movement, the youth and student movement, people's organizations, in short. It should have a function during elections to put forward candidates and so forth, but also between elections to push and press and demand and insist that the program that unites a people's coalition, which would be a program that puts people's needs before corporate greed, should be fought for, and should be that those who are elected on that platform have to deliver the goods.
Now,
so it can't be left to governments, in short. So different kind of coalition, but, you know, really quite different.
I didn't hear you talk about people of color or what they so-called racialized groups one, but two. I am really concerned about the NDP's international policies. I mean, NDP, mm-hmm. they are in Libya, Haiti,
right.
Afghanistan. When I say they, I mean Canada. And unfortunately, Jack Layton signed on to the resolution about Libya. And I know the Communist Party has opposed what is taking place in Libya and opposed Afghanistan, the situation in Afghanistan. And I know that the CP is not that happy about the drones being dropped by President Obama on...
That's right. In fact, Canada is heading up the NATO mission.
What's the guy's name? Bouchard. There's a Canadian...
The Canadian general.
General Bouchard. I think his name is Bouchard. I'm afraid
I can't remember.
Right.
But yes, Canada is heading up this mission on behalf of NATO. And so it's Canadians who are dropping these bombs on Tripoli, blowing up the University of Tripoli, hospitals, schools, etc. So there is nothing responsibility to protect. They're not protecting anything. They're killing a great many civilians. They're blowing up infrastructure for civil society. Canada is it is shocking and appalling that anybody would go along with this. It's particularly shocking that the NDP would go along with it. In fact, they all did in the House. The Communist Party is the only political party that opposed it and continues to oppose it. We also note with concern that the NDP has accepted that the astronomically high military budget should be left alone. We want to cut it by 75%. It's now at $28 billion a year, which is an enormous amount of money. Add to that the $30 billion or so, who knows what the final figure will be, mm-hmm. for the F-35 warplanes. The $6 billion in corporate tax cuts, you know, the super prisons, all this stuff. And all those funds should be redirected towards civilian spending. We want to see it invested, invest in jobs, job creation, healthcare, education, pensions, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different approach, and we're surprised that the NDP has taken the positions that it has with respect to peace and war. Most people think that the NDP is a party of peace, and it used to be, but it isn't anymore. And some of the other things that we're concerned about that have come out of the NDP, and that is the Mr. Layton's assertion that the job creation, the core of job creation in this country is small business, and that the way to stimulate job creation is tax cuts to small business. Well, whatever happened to their concern about secondary industry and manufacturing? This is where the good jobs are, the well-paid jobs, the jobs that will benefit Canada in terms of building up a sustainable industrialized economy. So if you're talking now, if you're not talking about that at all, and you're only focused on small business, you're more or less, we conclude, what else can you conclude, not very interested in that, and in maintaining industry and manufacturing in Canada, and that's essential. The car industry, for example, is the engine of the economy in Ontario, and for that matter in Canada. And we need a Canadian car. We need to get out of NAFTA. We need to have some control over U.S. car makers in Canada, who think they can do whatever they want here. And apparently they can, because the Canadian government's prepared to let them do whatever they want to. But we expected more from the NDP. I should say Canadians expect more from the NDP.
Now, in terms of manufacturing, is it manufacturing? So people have said manufacturing is dead, it's not coming back anymore, but isn't it possible for manufacturing to come back through a green economy?
Yes, but we think that the main thing is there needs to be a decision made in this country that we want to have manufacturing and we want secondary industry. If you have a government that wants to do those things, they will act accordingly. So, for example, we need an industrial strategy for the country that's based on a sustainable development of industry and manufacturing. We don't want industry that is going to, that's bad for the environment and so on. So that means you have to have a strategy, a plan for development that meets the needs of Canada. For example, the steel industry. Now, here's an example. The Steel Company of Canada was sold off to U.S. Steel. That was the last Canadian basic steel manufacturer in the country, and U.S. Steel proceeded to close down the operations in Hamilton. In fact, they've locked out their employees now since November, so it's almost 6 months. And as they closed down the furnaces in Hamilton, they opened two new ones in south of the border and are supplying Canada with steel that's actually made in the U.S. So what's with that? This is bad for Canada. If we're talking about stimulus spending, infrastructure spending, why on earth would we use U.S.-made steel? We need a steel industry so that we can, so that stimulus programs can be using Canadian steel. And this was done under the Investment Canada. It was the same deal that was made with Vale in Sudbury.
Sudbury, right. And that was the long, Vale had the...
They had a one-year strike.
Right, right.
And it was over pensions. And they took over from Inkel. And the first thing they did was, we want your pensions. Mm-hmm. We're taking your pensions. And So the workers there, to their credit, put up an enormous resistance, being out on strike for a year, and they were finally beaten. And I think the reason they were beaten was because it was mainly dealt with as a collective bargaining issue, and really it's a political issue right across the country, pensions, and the workers' rights to have decent pensions. But in any event, they put up a big fight, and they did their best. But Vale broke all the rules, too, the same way that U.S. Steel did. They were supposed to maintain the levels of production, the workforce, for a three-year period minimum, and they did none of that. And, in fact, they turned on their workers first thing. You'd think it was the United States or Brazil or, you know, I guess they come in and they think, oh, well, so who cares about the government? This is how we do things.
Right.
So we need governments to say, no, 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 this is Canada and this is how you do things. And you don't drive down people's wages and pensions and you don't close up shop and move operations out. But we have had governments here, first the Liberals and now the Conservatives, which seem quite willing to allow these big multinational corporations to call the shots and determine what Canada will look like.
And you're listening to CKLN.FM. We are going to open up the phones. The number here is 416-595-1655, 416-595-1655, and I believe we actually have a call, huh? Saturday Morning Live, hello.
Hi, I was just wondering, are you guys having any problems with the reception concerning your radio station?
Receptions, we are online. Are you listening online?
Am I on the air right now?
Yes, you are.
Oh my goodness! I'm sorry. I didn't realize that.
You're as they say in the United States, you're on Front Street, right?
That's awesome. For the last 2 weeks, I've just been having trouble receiving 88.1, so I just thought I'd give you guys a quick call.
No, the CRTC took us off of line. It's been in the press, supposedly in the press, but
Okay. I just got back into town.
Oh, just got back in town. But no, it hasn't. Yeah. It hasn't been that publicized. But you can let everybody know. You can go to CKLN.FM, and are you listening online?
No, but I will be in a second if I can't listen on my receiver.
Yeah, well, you can www.ckln or www.ckln.fm.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, bye now.
All right. The number here is 416-595-1655, 416-595-1655. I'm in the studio with JP and Liz Rolley of the Communist Party. She is running in the Brampton.
I have a gift for you. Hold on.
A gift for me or for us?
Yeah, check it out.
We can barely hear you. Oh. Oh.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the recording session. Have a seat. Have a cup of tea. Have a glass of water. We're about to start.
And that was our theme song. But Jane Cortez, out of born in Arizona, grew up in Los Angeles, living in New York City. But 416-595-1655, 416-595-1655. Give us a call and you can speak with Liz Rolley and talk about the program of the Communist Party of Canada and talk about the campaign that they are running and the whole question of the history of electoral politics in Canada. Could you talk about that? Like, you know, some parties on the left don't believe in electoral politics. Why would the Communist Party participate in any election?
Well, we think that the struggle for social justice and for socialism, which is what we are all about, has got two sides to it. Part of it is electoral, and part of it is...
We have a call. We can deal with that one. Hello, Saturday Morning Live. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, Saturday Morning Live, you're on.
Am I on there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I have a quick question. Over, this is Richard.
Oh, Richard, yeah, we're on. Yeah, are you listening?
I'm listening online.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
You have a question for Liz Riley, not me.
Oh, okay, yeah, I have a quick question.
No problem, go ahead.
Yesterday I had a discussion with somebody, and they were explaining that, they were explaining the...
You should turn your monitor down. Yes.
Okay, 2 seconds.
You're listening to www.ckln.fm.
Okay, anyways, I had a discussion with somebody, and they were telling me that the reason why the MVP is doing good because of that mustache, he looks good, he smiles good, whereas Michael Ignatieff, he's boring and whatever. So he was trying to explain the rise of the NDP in terms of personalities.
Right.
And I was trying to tell him that somehow the material conditions, the world economic crisis, has more to do with it than people's personality. So could you explain again the rise of the NDP?
All right, I'll let Liz Riley do that. Thank
well,
you.
I think you're right. You know, I think the polls, at least, we'll see what happens on voting day. But I think people have got the message that that the Tories are very dangerous. That and it's in the context of you know, massive job insecurity, rising prices, housing that's not affordable, paychecks that are too small to stretch to cover all of the expenses that people have. People are really worried, and they're looking for a government that is going to do something to improve their lives, to change the situation. And so they're beginning to you know, really pay attention to politics and who's responsible for this mess. And so I think you know, you see a solid block for the Conservatives, which seems to be pretty you know, it doesn't change much. It goes up a little or down a little, but it's basically, I guess, about a third of the vote, 35% maybe. And then there's the other 65%. People are trying to figure out how to get by. And I think people have decided that they've had enough of the Liberal line. And they've had enough of Liberal governments that have delivered essentially the same things as the Conservatives, and they want something different. And they know that the NDP is, you know, got it's got a more radical history, let's say. It's connected with the trade union movement, social justice movements, and so on. I think people are shifting in that direction. They want some more fundamental change. That's why I think also that we're going to do a little better than usual, because people are looking at us with those kind of eyes as well. So I think that's a very good development, that people are looking for political parties which are actually going to do something to improve their standard of living and their quality of life. And they've begun to understand that the old line parties are big business parties, and that their job is essentially to you know, to serve the wealthy in this country. And that's not a, you know, for someone like me, that's not hard to understand, because if you just look at the Elections Canada returns, for example, which I'm privy to, and you can too if you go to their website, you can see who the donors are to those parties. They're the who's who of the Canadian establishment. That's who supports those parties. And and that's an explanation for why they do the things that they do. Having said that, I do want to say that from our perspective, we think that the Tories are the more dangerous of the two at this point. And if there is one party that you can point to and say this is the party of war and reaction in Canada, it's the Conservatives. And so that's why we sort of have targeted them as the main danger. But as Norman was saying a few minutes ago, the part of our slogans for the election are, you know, dump the Tories and block the right. Well, replacing the Tories with a Liberal majority will not be a big step forward. And Canadians seem to understand that, as you've said with the comments that you made a moment ago. They're looking for something more fundamental, and they've decided they're going to shift, as they see it, they're going to shift a bit left and give the NDP a try. I really hope that the NDP delivers the goods, by the way, because in those cases where the NDP has had an opportunity and hasn't delivered the goods, there's often been a backlash to the right, which would be very dangerous for Canada.
You're listening to Saturday Morning Live. The number here is 416-595-1655. I think we have another call. Saturday Morning Live, hello.
Yeah, do you believe in strategic voting?
You're asking Miss Riley that?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. No. And I'll tell you why. I think that people have been forced to use strategic voting because we have we don't have proportional representation. If we had proportional representation, then everybody's vote would count. Since we don't have it, people are sort of trying to figure out how they can use their votes, not necessarily to get what they want, but how can they block what they don't want? So how can they prevent the Tories from securing a majority, for example?
So and if I can't vote for you, who would I vote for?
Oh, well, I would say vote for the party or the candidate with a program that is closest to ours. And so what would that be? Well, it would be a party that wants to cut the military budget in this country by 75%. If you can find one that wants to do it for 50%, vote for them.
But so substantial. I vote NDP, I guess, yeah.
Well, you'd have to make that decision.
Not a lot of choices here, yeah. Well, okay, thanks.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
Thank you. The number here is 416-595-1655. This is Saturday Morning Live. We are online, and it looks like we have people listening and asking some very intelligent questions. And I don't think you would have this discussion on commercial radio, and I don't think you would even have this discussion on the CBC, although the CBC
For sure.
is supposed to be the information station.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
We like to say that this is the progressive information station, CKLN. We style ourselves as being the progressive information station. We will have people, NDP, and to the left of the NDP. We would actually have people to the left of the NDP. We have another call. Saturday Morning Live. Hello.
Yes, hi. How are you, Norman?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thanks. I'm very glad that you're actually having this show today. And for me, my concern is that, you know, following politics the economy, not just in Canada, but globally, what I've been noticing is there has been a systemic erosion of public life. Any quality of people having some sort of involvement in the public, even if it is to go out and work in their jobs every day and to be a citizen who supports, you know, their nation in that way, you know, through their taxes and through stimulating the economy and working, you know, just being a worker within, you know, it's a social contract, so to speak, that we have. And what I have seen is a steady erosion globally as we've moved into this new mechanism of economics, global economics, really, because I don't think we have governance anymore. I think what is actually happening is the world is being run by very large multinational corporations that are larger in terms of what their balance sheets show than the majority of nations in the world. And so I guess the concern that I have is within this structure, which almost seems to be a stranglehold, where things like this issue with U.S. Steel happened, where even Vale Inco will sign contracts with the government and just not honor them, and there's nothing we can do, or even that, you know, a typically socialist party like the NDP, who has its roots in the CCF, is now having to move their agenda because they recognize that they really can't take on these corporations given the global scope, and to move it into, you know, tax breaks for smaller businesses, which, by the way, employ 80% of Canadians. Now, 80% of Canadians at subsistent wages, precarious employment, all of those sorts of things, but still, the corporations do not employ the majority of Canadians, nor does the manufacturing sector, even though it provides good wages, employ enough Canadians as well. And I suppose my question would be, within the context of that, where does a more radical political party like the Communist Party see themselves moving? Like, what might be the next agenda to make people think differently on a global level?
Well, we think that, I agree with you that there are transnational corporations which are more powerful in governments, and there are many of them. What we don't have is governments, and we certainly don't have a government in Canada which is willing to take them on and curb corporate power. Really, that's the issue at the end of the day. And the measures that we are advocating in our electoral program and in our policies generally is how to curb and finally to eliminate the power of the transnational corporations. I think you're mistaken about the NDP, by the way. It was Broadbent in 1984 who said that that the party had gotten rid of the baggage of socialism, quote unquote. And I think that's the reason why they're moving towards the middle. It's not because they have found out that there are things they can't do. What they found out what they've decided is they're not interested in socialism and they're trying to accommodate with capitalism. So there's a fundamental difference between the Communist Party and the NDP on that fundamental question. And I think one of the reasons they're moving towards small business is because they're trying to actually replace the Liberals. They see their role as being a better Liberal Party than the Liberal Party, and that's why their policies are what they are. I think that's the explanation, for example, for their positions on war and peace. Yes, they're for peace and they're against war, but they're not for cutting the military budget, and they're not for voting against the Libyan mission. So, you know, words and deeds, as it were. I think that it's true that the majority of jobs in Canada are not in the manufacturing or secondary industry sectors, but those are the absolutely crucial sectors in terms of the Canadian economy. Without them, we will be reduced to, drawers of water and hewers of wood, resource suppliers to the U.S. economy, and raw materials producers, and a market for the finished goods which the U.S. economy will sell back to us at how many more times the price. You know, it doesn't make sense. If you have the Canadian government should be interested at least a little bit in Canadian sovereignty and Canadian interests. Right. And if that was the case, that they would be looking at building up an economic base for Canada. There has to be, in a country our size, and with the wealth, that the natural wealth that we have, there has to be an industrial strategy. There has to be a strategy for building up a Canadian economy.
Could I cut you off right here? I wanted to ask you, are you advocating, I'm talking to Liz, advocating that Canada produce its own automobile, as a like Japan, just like Germany has, Italy, Japan.
Yep.
Are you talking about
yes.
a Canadian car as
a
opposed
Canadian
to
car.
As opposed to a Ford, a Chevrolet,
yes,
or a Cadillac?
We have produced plenty of cars in Canada, but none of them is Canadian. They're produced by they're made by Canadian workers, but they're all either the big three in the U.S. or they're, as you say, from Japan or Korea or what have you. We have a population and a market that's big enough for a small, fuel-efficient, sustainable Canadian car.
Yes.
And we should be building one. Why not?
And do you think perhaps that the reason why we're not is, and Norman, I would feel that your listenership would get this more so than a lot of other people, is because this behemoth of the United States of America has been influencing through covert actions and real corruption certain elements of our governance structure in order to make sure that these kinds of things don't happen in Canada. Because it's shocking to me that we're still talking about the fact that Canada is hewers of wood and drawers of water. We've known this forever, and yet I think you actually make a really good point. The leadership to talk about this just doesn't exist, you know. And maybe that's something that your talk is helping us understand as this orange wave takes over. You mentioned already holding, the NDP and Layton's feet to the fire. Maybe it's an opportunity to push them in this direction, because I think a lot more than either the Liberals or the Conservatives, they're able to see this reality.
Well, I don't think we need covert action in Canada. We've got, you know, to push us in an American direction. We've got a prime minister who just can't get there fast enough, who's sort of the mini, you know, the mini Bush,
yeah.
Or even the mini Obama. Because I've heard, and it makes sense to me that you could compare Obama to a red Tory, or maybe even not so red a Tory in Canada. In any event, their policies are not very different. I want to be clear here that with all of the shortcomings of the NDP, there's no question that the election of more NDPers would be a good thing for Canada. The question is, what direction are they going to follow? Are they going to do what they did in Ontario, let's say around public auto insurance? Auto insurance and gas and oil and so on are a big issue at the moment. If we had public auto insurance in Ontario, that would be a very good thing, or across the country. But the problem was that they did well for the first year, and then they completely capitulated to the insurance companies. So I think that how well the NDP and the Liberals, if they get together, how well they will do, will hinge to a large degree on how much pressure on them there is on a sustained basis from the labor movement, the women's movement, the student movement, from people's organizations that are cooperating together and are organized to push. So I think, you know, as I said, in Ontario, getting rid of the Davis Tories was a big step forward objectively for Ontario. The problem was that the governments that succeeded the Davis government were no hell. they could have been much better. And in the current situation, which I think is similar, they need to be a lot better. Why? Because people are really, really hurting. There are great, you know, masses of people who cannot make ends meet because of the policies of previous governments, and because of the economic system itself. The political system is, you know, in crisis and causing a great deal of misery to many people. So we have to have governments that are better. And so I would argue that the best guarantee of governments that would actually react and deliver on people's needs is to elect some communists. And that's why we are running. We're running 20 candidates across the country. If we were to elect one, Parliament wouldn't be the same place. If we elected 20, it would be, you know, miles ahead of where it is today. And you could be sure that the issues that we are fighting for, nationalization of gas and oil, natural and energy resources, for example, which would allow Canada to introduce a two-price system for gas and oil, higher price for export, a lower price for domestic use. So that would bring down the price of gasoline at the pumps, and also home heating and so forth. That would be a very good thing to do. Even the Liberals recognized that under Trudeau when they set up Petro-Can. So the very conservative elements in the country have doused that and eliminated that. But that's a direction that we can go and we should go, and that would be in the interest of Canadians and of Canada.
Well, thank you very much. I've taken a lot of your time, so I will get off the phone. But maybe since you have brought up this nationalization, you might also speak to sort of the fears on a global level about trade barriers, that once you start this, mm-hmm. you're going to start, you know, a trade war, right? Tariff war.
Well, all right. We thank you.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry for cutting you.
No, not at all. Well, she had your caller had very interesting questions. Thoughtful person. I think it's time we had some trade wars, in the sense that, I mean that in this sense, that we have whatever the American government has wanted Canada to do, we have just said how high, how quick, how fast, what do you want? And so it's time there was a little resistance there. And we think we should have a get out of NAFTA and all these trade deals, that we need a Trade policy, which is mutually beneficial, and a multilateral. Canada should also be extending long-term credits to developing countries so that, the trade isn't just a one-way benefit to Canada, but it helps developing countries to grow as well. And Canada actually has a responsibility over 300 or 400 years where we have done everything we can to exploit developing countries. It's about time that some trade arrangements were made that were actually mutually beneficial.
And I would like to ask, we have about 3 minutes. Is there anything else you would like to add? We would like to be off of the air in a few moments, but is there your parting thoughts, not your final thoughts, but your parting thoughts on the May 2nd Canadian federal elections, your last statement?
Well, I think that this election is not a horse race. If people see it that way, we'll get the winners, but people won't be happy with the result. I think this is an election where people really have to take a look at what the parties stand for, vote for parties which have policies that are will actually address the crisis that is has enveloped the country, the economic crisis, the social crisis, the crisis of democracy. And I would argue that the communist candidates in the Communist Party put forward the best overall, most consistent program for real change in this country, change that puts people before profits. I think that's what people should vote for, and I think that's what the polls actually are showing people are trying to do. And I think that's good.
All right, thank you. And we have been speaking with Elizabeth Rowley of the Communist Party. I would like to thank John Hodgkinson, JP, for teching today. I would like to thank Kelson and Fareed of the Gorilla Crew for Amanla. I'd like to thank Dr. Gerald Horn. And I would like to thank Melinda Francis. And I would also like to thank Harry Jerome. We had an interview with Harry Jerome, the late great Harry Jerome, which he did in 1968. And we're going to end this show with the music of Tiki Mercury Clark. And we will see you next week. And take care.
Song ga wa hang 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 ga wa Sanjay Gamzelenya. Sanjay Gamzelenya.